Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Don Schwartz is our guest today. He's an actor and journalist. His book, Telling Their Own Stories, Conversations with Documentary Filmmakers, is available from Amazon. And his film reviews and filmmaker profiles appear regularly in CineSource magazine. And Don holds BA, MA, PhD degrees in psychology and counseling. So welcome, Carol and Don, to Dissecting Docs. What documentaries are we going to be covering today?
Well, we're reviewing four docs from First Run Features and HBO and covering one from the Roy Dean Film Grant, Claire. So I'm so excited that we're getting to talk about The Winding Stream because it's a film that's been in the making for a long time, and the story is brilliant, the animation, it's all very special. But what we're going to start with today will be Doug Block's new film called 112 Weddings, then Maiden Trip. Both of those are from HBO. And then we have Life Behind the Camera and The Case Against Eight. Life Behind the Camera is First Run Features, Maiden Trip is First Run, and Case Against Eight is from HBO. So I think we'll start with you, Don, let you tell us what you think about 112 Weddings.
Okay, 112 Weddings is produced and directed by Doug Block. And Doug is an acclaimed career documentary filmmaker, and like some of the documentary filmmakers I've interviewed in the past, he supports his habit by being a professional videographer, and he has done, as of the time of his film, he has videoed 112 weddings, but he's also a skilled documentary filmmaker, so he got the very clever idea of interviewing the couples that he covered in their marriages. And so he put together the interviews of the couples, juxtaposed them with the clips from their weddings, and he found nine couples, to be clear. And and it is an HBO show. You mentioned HBO earlier, Carol. It's an HBO documentary. And although the film is entitled 112 Weddings, it's really about the marriages. And what it does is it gives you both a sweet and sour vision of marriage, of the glow of the new relationship and the marriage, and then the problems that surface as the years go on. And one of the things that I liked about it is that we frequently hear about the 50% divorce rate in the U.S., and we rarely hear about the marriages that do survive. How are they? What's it like for the other 50% who stay married? And this film does a good job of answering that.
Yes, it does, Don. Well, I love the couple that were talking at the same time. I mean, she was talking about one subject, he was talking about another, both interesting, but you couldn't understand either one of them because they were talking at the same time. And I thought, that's a great marriage. They have given each other a lot of freedom there.
Well, Carol, this is hilarious. Of all the clips in that movie that I saw, that clip, which is like the very first clip of an interview in the film, is a clip that stays with me. It was both comic and touching, And you could interpret it in different ways. You could say, oh, this couple is comfortable with talking over each other, or, oh, these are two narcissists that don't pay attention to each other.
Right, but no, he did a fabulous job. He was sitting there on all that material, and it was very smart of him to make this film. There's a quote in there from Rabbi Jonathan Blake saying, happy weddings are a dime a dozen. Happy marriages are much rarer and therefore more precious. And I think that's really the heart of the film.
Absolutely. This is one of those movies that it could have gone on another hour.
Yes, yes. Well, Sue and Steve, the first wedding he ever did, they've been married 19 years, and now they're getting a divorce. And I remember Steve saying that he said, I've learned that life isn't so black and white anymore, because he always hated people who were saying they had to get a divorce. He thought that was horrendous, but now he truly understands that things change as life goes on. But the good news was that the duo, what was it, Janice and Alexander, I think, they were partners in a ceremony that Doug filmed 13 years ago about partnership. It wasn't a marriage. They didn't want that. But now they're coming back to get married after they've had two children.
Right, and you're capturing the bittersweet quality of the film. It shows the unhappiness, and it does show the love. There is plenty of love. I need to emphasize that in this film.
Yes, there is. And joy and weddings and celebrations and great ideas. If you're getting married anytime soon, you want to watch it because it's full of great ideas for weddings. But let's go to Maiden Trip. What did you think about that film?
Okay. I see three or four documentary films a week, and only a few stick to the ribs. And Maiden Trip is one of the ones that will haunt me forever. So Maiden Trip is a film directed by Gillian Schlesinger, and it's released in First Run Features in 2013. And it's about a young woman named Laura Decker. And at the age of 13, she said she wanted to be the youngest person to sail around the world solo. And there was a year-long battle, because I believe they were in Denmark or the Netherlands. Correct me if
Holland.
I'm wrong.
They're in Holland.
Holland. Okay, the Netherlands. And they had to fight the government because the government didn't want her to do this, and they tried to take custody of her away from her father, who was supporting her. So the father and the daughter won that case, and Laura Decker was free at the age of 14 to set out on a two-year voyage around the world by herself. And this film covers that. It covers includes interviews of them before, the father and the daughter before. And then Laura Decker took a camera with her, and much of the film is Laura speaking to the camera. And I every time I think about the film, my jaw drops, that such a young person could take on such a huge odyssey.
Exactly. Who would have the courage to sail for, 700 days all on your own, night and day? How did she stay on course during the night? Because usually, I mean, I have a friend who sailed around the world with her husband, and they took turns. Somebody was on deck watching at all times for other ships and for problems. And so she didn't. She had to sleep, and she was in horrendous weather sometime, and she had herself chained to the boat. I mean, it was a thrilling film for me. I loved every minute of it.
I'm with you, and I confess I could have used another hour of this film specifically to get more details about how she did everything that she did, even cooking and cleaning and all the cleaning up she had to do after storms and navigating. I wanted to know all about that.
Yes, it was great. Well, We have to give a lot of credit to the director and the editor, not only to Laura for doing such a superb job with learning how to talk on camera and how to keep you interested. Anybody who's doing a camera blog on a daily basis and can keep you interested for 90 minutes is pretty good. So there had to be some direction from the director to her on how to do it, right?
I guess so. Now, you're bringing up another question I'd like to know the answer to.
Right. I think she had some good training from the director, and how she sent her material to them, I don't know how she transferred the material, but I'm sure that they were getting it on a weekly basis or sometime quickly after it was recorded so that they could give her feedback, and because it is brilliantly done. The film is excellent. You see her go around the Cape of Good Hope. That is a dangerous place, and here she is all alone. She just did a superb job in taking us on land and to see some of the places that she visited, getting us into the beauty of the ocean, why she loves the ocean. You felt like you were on that boat with her, and it's a guppy is the name of it, the guppy. It's just a little boat when you think of the size of the ocean and that she was on there all alone. It's an astonishing feat.
Something I noticed, Carol, is that as the trip went on, as she spoke to the camera, it seemed as if the camera became a friend, that was her friend that she got to talk to, and it was like the film Castaway with Tom Hanks, that camera became her Wilson.
Yes. Well, absolutely, yes. And I felt she was talking to me. I just thought she did a great job. If you think about this, 2 years, over 700 days, she did over 700 blogs. Now, they have to review them, translate them, put them into words of whatever language, I don't know. And then they had to decide what to use, what not to use. It was an immense editing job because they had to work in the footage at the beginning of the court case where the father almost lost the daughter, the celebration when she took off, the communications between she and her family during the trip, and the successful celebration at the end of the trip. So there was a lot of information in the film, and it was just tight. It was a tightly edited film. You felt like you were on the trip is the best thing I can say.
Absolutely. If there was an Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature Editor, that the editor would get that.
Yes, she did a wonderful job, and the director, too. It was a great debut for Jill-Ann Schlesinger. So I went on the website, and she does have a website. It's Laura Decker, Decker, .com, but if you Google Laurel Decker, you'll find her website. She was just recently out here in California, Northern California, in the Redwoods, because she's maintained her love for travel and is going all over the world and posting it on her blog. It's lots of fun to keep up with her.
Yep, I'll say again, this is a haunting film. I highly recommend it.
Well, okay, let's go to The Case Against Eight, Don.
Mm-hmm. Well, The Case Against Eight is an HBO documentary. It was directed by Ben Kuttner and Ryan White and was released this year. And the film follows the legal case that came out of the people of California voting for Proposition 8, which banned same-sex marriage. And when that happened, when that ban happened, two same-sex couples emerged to fight the proposition, to get that proposition nullified. And there is a team of documentary filmmakers who followed the legal team and the same-sex couples in a five-year battle to reverse Proposition 8. And it includes the unlikely pairing of Ted Olson and David Boies. They were fighting for the banning of Proposition 8. They were representing the two same-sex couples. And Boies and Olson fought against each other in the Supreme Court battle for the presidency, the Bush presidency, when there was a dispute at the presidential election that went to the Supreme Court. And, of course, Bush ended up winning, and look at the effect of that victory for Bush. And yet these two worked together on this very socially liberal issue, this socially liberal case. It was fascinating to see that the former enemies be such strong allies.
Yes, it was good. And they chose two couples that were really good. Both of them truly loved each other, and they were there to represent all gay people. And I think they did a marvelous job, and I know they must have done a fabulous background check, because had anyone had anything, even a DWI or anything like that on their record, they would have brought it up, because the opposition was so fierce. And so they chose the right people, and they covered them well, and they won. But it was a hard battle, and that film did a great job of showing you what it's like to go to court over and over again, and from one court to another, they kept running them around. It was like they were getting the royal runaround. But they survived, and they did a great job of documenting a very important moment in history.
Yeah, well, this was like Ron Howard's Apollo 13, because you know what's going to happen, yet you're watching this film, and then you get as tense as if you didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, tell me what you thought about the director's life behind the camera.
The director's life behind the camera. That was released in 2006, and what they did with this documentary is they interviewed famous film directors, the likes of Robert Altman, David Lynch, Bryan Singer, Scorsese, Eastwood, George Lucas, James Cameron, 33 directors. They also interviewed some celebrated actors. They interviewed some industry veterans, and they juxtapose these clips. As they interview any one director, they show clips of their movies. And the directors primarily are talking about what it's like to be a director. And the actors talk about what it's like being directed. And this film is 4 hours long. It comes on two discs. And it was very sophisticated in how they put it together. You could look at it by director, or you could look at it by topic. They divided the film into topics, such as Everyone Has to Start Somewhere, The Art of Writing and Choosing Scripts, The Most Compelling Film, Long After They're Gone. There are several different topics, and you can look at these clips by topic or by director. And one of the things, I'm an actor, so one of the things that I found interesting is what's really important. 20 of the directors appear in the section about working with actors. But all 33 speak about working with their cinematographers. And so it's all about the shot. And that's one of the things we're taught, is it's all about the shot.
No, absolutely. I've been watching Boardwalk Empire, and the cinematographer on that film, the art director, the cinematographer, the directors, are giving you some of the greatest scenes. They are incredibly beautiful, well-designed. It's amazing to me. So, yes, getting into their heads, I mean, I don't know how much footage they shot of each interview, but the clips they showed us were perfect. We really felt like we got to know that director. Now, I've watched a lot of interviews of directors, because I have my favorites that I love. I'll never miss an interview with any of them. But some of these directors I didn't really know that well, and I felt like I knew them after I watched this. How about you?
Absolutely. And, of course, this is another film. Even though it's 4 hours long, I would like to have seen more of those interviews with the directors.
Well, it started out with Gary Marshall, the section I watched, saying there are three things that you have to combine in filmmaking. They are art, parking, and lunch. And he's so right. Usually parking is a disaster, but lunch is fun, and it's all about art. And Penny Marshall says that no movie is easy to make because it takes a lot of time, and you have to compromise every day. And I think that's probably the director's job, is to compromise between the acting, the lighting, the shot, and this writing, and getting it all together so that we get the story in the most artistic way.
So Carol, I'm ready for another version of this film. I'd like to see the likes of Richard Linklater, Josh Whedon, Zack Snyder, Wes Anderson, Alexander Payne, and Jon Favreau. I'd like to start with some contemporary directors, a new version of this film.
Oh, that's a great idea. Great idea. Well, I am a big fan of Robert Altman, and I loved it when he was telling us that each time he started to film, that while he was doing it and editing, he always would think and believe that it's the greatest film that ever happened, knowing in his heart that everybody would love this film, that it'll win an Academy Award. And, of course, he said, they don't. But that's okay, because that's how I made it, and that's how I feel about the film. But he's never gone into making a film that he didn't feel would be a knockout. And, you know, he's made some wonderful films. When he was making MASH, he was telling us that in an interview, in another interview I saw, that the studio was very busy with a high-budget film, so they weren't paying too much attention to him. I think his budget was really a very low budget. And so he just kept his head down and kept making the film, and they didn't really pay attention until it was almost over. And then it was too late to change it, because he sort of snuck that by them, is what he said. And, of course, it turned out to be incredibly good, and they used that to make how many of the TV series? I made 50, 70 shows out of it because it was such a great concept. So I think that's one of my favorites that he did. But he's a brilliant director, and I really miss his work.
That makes two of us.
Yeah. But, you know, Bryan Singer, I loved the interview with him, and I loved the segments about the care and feeding of actors. That was brilliant, and how they got started. Everyone has to start somewhere. So I highly recommend it. It's part of the Art of Filmmaking Collector's Edition. It's a 6-disc box set, and I think all of the tales from the script, Capturing Reality, it's a great set. So that's that's one of my favorite sets that I have bought.
I think it's a must-have.
Tell me about Finding Scream. Don, did you really enjoy that film? That is the one that won the Roy Dean Film Grant.
Right. That's another film that haunts me, because I barely ever heard of the Carter family. So let me just get into this. This is a film by Beth Harrington, and it's called The Winding Stream. And I put a subtitle of The Big Bang of Country Music. And I'm not involved with country music, and especially old-timey music. And what I learned about was the Carter family. And the film follows this family from the late 1800s through today. But the genesis of the Carter family in terms of music were three people, A.P., Sarah, and Maybell, and they are called the original Carter family. And they were like the beginning of generations of Carters, but more than that, they helped create what we now know as country music. And the film follows those three. And I swear, I could have seen a separate documentary for each of those three people. I could see a narrative film, even though it may not be, it's not considered hip. Country music is not considered hip. But their stories are universal. They're dramatic. They're heartwarming. And they're jaw-dropping.
Yes, that's very true. No, it's a story of A.C. Carter, who goes out into the mountains and brings back the music. See, the Carter family were all into music. And so once their music started to make sales, then A.C. met a guy called Ralph Peer. And Peer's plans for the Carter Trio grew more ambitious as he looked at the fact that Carter was coming up with new music all the time. So Carter realized that the real money was from the songs. So he got educated from Peer on how to make money, because he and his family were all musicians. They loved music. So now he could find a way to support the family. So Peer wanted Carter to keep the songs coming, and Carter he expected Carter to show up every 3 or 4 months with a bag full of songs, and that's exactly what Carter did. He became obsessed about collecting songs, and he was asking if you knew anyone who had a good song, and he would go out and get the words. And he met an African-American man and took him with him, Leslie Riddle. Because there were no tape recorders in those days, but Leslie had a brain and a mind. He could carry that tune with him. So Carter would scribble down the words. Leslie would get the tune, and then they'd go back home to Maybelle and Sarah and set up this little production company, and they would get their instruments out, start playing with the words and the tunes. And it became like a little factory there. Some of these songs were from the Elizabethan area, or they were short stories. They were from the churches. They were from everywhere. And he saved them for us. Carter created the genre, practically, that we have now of the country western music. You just went up the hills and brought this music back, because it could have died out over the years, but he saved it. And his wife, Maybelle, she was one of the greatest artists. Johnny Cash, this is the last interview of Johnny Cash that he ever gave to anybody, and he talks about Maybelle. She was a brilliant woman. There was never a guitar single done before Maybelle. She's the one that made the guitar single a reality. Did you know that?
That was news to me.
Yeah, me too. But if you go back down into Texas, I was telling my aunt, is about 90 years old, about this film. And she said, oh, honey, Maybelle was the source. She was the smart one. She is the one that they all bowed down to. She ran the show. Well, she was very talented. So that's what happened, was that the Carters were very popular, and Johnny heard them when he was a kid, and he fell in love with June Carter, listening to the music, and then he finally, he starts to rise while the Carter family's coming down in popularity. Johnny is coming up. And then he meets June, and he pulls the Carter family back into the limelight. It's a wonderful story. It's all about love, music, family, and country western stuff. So I highly recommend it. Now, she hasn't released this yet. She won awards at South by Southwest, and she has had a brilliant review recently. Lots of people love the film. I think she's still making a decision who she's going with for distribution. So where is the film now that you know of? Or have you heard any more about it?
No, I just saw it. I reviewed it, and I loved it. This is a must-see movie. It is so entertaining. You don't have to love country music to love this film.
No, you don't. And I think about A.C. Carter going up into the mountains. Now, he didn't have any money. There were no hotels up there. There were no restaurants. He probably had to have a loaf of bread and some bologna. And how he kept it cold, I don't know. But anyway, he'd go up in the mountains, talk to people. He probably was asked or invited to eat in their homes and maybe sleep in the bedroom, on the floor, in the barn. Whatever he did whatever he had to do to get the music, bring it back, and I think we owe him big thanks for what he's done. And what she has done with this film, Beth Harrington has put it together brilliantly, and her animation is so special. You've got to see the film to understand what I'm saying. I had some friends over, Don, and I said, okay, I'm going to I know you don't like docs, but give me 10 minutes, please. I just want to show you the beginning of this film. Well, 15 minutes went by. I said, okay, thanks for watching. They said, don't you dare cut this off. You can go fix us some drinks. We're not leaving. And they watched every minute and loved it. So you don't have to be a song lover, a country western lover. You just have to love a good story, Don.
Yeah, good story, expertly produced. It could not have been produced any better.
Oh, I thank you. I totally agree with you. Well, From the Heart is very excited that you're going to be putting your brilliant blog on our site. So fromtheheartproductions.com will be hosting all of your blogs starting next week. So that'll be the first part of September. So tell us more.
Well, I'm going to be submitting my reviews of doc films, and I'm extremely gratified that I have this opportunity to share that with you and yours.
Good. Well, you put up what, one a week or two a week, Don?
Well, we haven't talked about that, but I'll warn you, I'll put up a bunch of them. I've watched 3 or 4 documentary films a week, and I review most of them.
Oh, this is fantastic. I think filmmakers will love that, and non-filmmakers too, because we only have so much time. There is so much to see. We're really lucky these days with all our different forms of entertainment. But knowing that there's a review of all current docs coming out really will help people make a decision what they want to see and what not based on the time they have available. So you're doing a brilliant job, and we really thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Carol. I want to emphasize that I keep my reviews short and sweet. I emphasize describing the setup of a film, and I do as much as possible not to give away the events. I like the viewer to see a film and to discover what I discovered.
Right. Well, they're always incredibly good, Don. I enjoy them. So we're going to do our show once a month, so we'll be back in September with 5 more shows. And hopefully things that you're interested in seeing and you'd like to know more about. So I'll see you then, Don and Claire, in next month.
Indeed. Okay.
Yes.
It's a date.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Wonderful.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Be well.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at fromtheheartproductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.